The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast. Where one of the hosts hates post routes. He hates everything associated with post. All mailmen. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am so happy to be joined by my longtime friend. He's an NFL Network host. You can catch him a lot of places, actually. Tell us all the places where people can find you, Patrick Claiborne.
Monday through Wednesday, NFL Fantasy Live. Friday, Game Day View. Sunday, Game Day Live. And as always, on social media website, twitter.com. If you call it the other thing, something's wrong with you.
And TikTok. You have a good TikTok, too.
Oh, thanks, man.
Trying to be better about that.
It's hard because it requires like so much effort every time. And if there's a tweet, like any inane thought when you're in line at the bank, like, okay, fine, you can fire that off. But like a TikTok, like I have to like, oh, somebody's going to be like, oh, your hairline is fine. It's like, just no, I'm not trying to do that all the time.
Well, you should check it out anyways. You're here not to do TikToks or tweet. You're here to talk about week three. Yes. I sent you a list of games that I wanted to get into. And then I mentioned to you right before we started, this is my new thing, just springing this on people. At the end, you will help me pick all the games for my family's Pick'em League, in which, update for listeners, I am currently in first place. Sunman Kimes is second. Yeah, so second. So we'll do that at the end. We'll go through all the games that we aren't talking about in depth. I was planning on talking about Bears Chiefs at the end, really as a means of talking about the Bears, not the Chiefs. Just because I haven't talked about the Bears, I feel like, you know, this is week three is when you get the like deluge of articles and podcasts about which 0-2 team should we panic about, right? And I've seen a lot of those, and we're going to talk about a couple of them later, actually, who are meeting head on in a very fascinating cursed game. But the Bears, I think, have reached a panic level that's kind of unmatched around the league. And it really comes down to, the Bears' defense must be like counting their lucky stars that no one's talking about them, because they're not so great either. But that was predictable. The question coming into the season was whether the offense would look better with some investments. Spoiler alert, it does not look better. Just to kind of give the overview for those who have mercifully not watched Bears games. Justin Fields currently 31st in QBR, 32nd in completion percentage over expectation. Choose your stat. But, you know, you don't need stats. It looks awful. It looks terrible. And, there's been a lot of really great work, articles, breakdowns. JT O'Sullivan, who was a guest on this podcast, did kind of a magnum opus just of disgust on the Bears offense. I thought another friend of the podcast, Ben Solak, had a good piece today in The Ringer. I think what is so frustrating about it, Patrick, is everybody agrees that everything is terrible.
Yes.
There's not a single variable that can be isolated, which is, and then people say, well, you're making excuses for Justin Fields. No one is making excuses for Justin Fields. Not a soul. But the whole thing looks bad. And then maybe you can actually kind of jump in here and fill everyone in. Justin Fields, I don't know how would we describe what happened today?
I think what happened today is we had a quarterback, Mina, who's not playing well. He knows he's not playing well, and he's searching within himself. He's trying to analyze this situation as how do I fix this? What can I do better? And what Justin Fields lands on is that I'm thinking a little bit too much. I need to go out there and just play. There were several third downs where maybe I'm holding on to the ball. I'm not leaving the pocket soon enough. I'm trying to, and this comes down to, well, it was like, well, what might be making you think too much? And he chews on it for a second. And he's like, well, coaching. Well, I'm not necessarily blaming coaching, but what I'm saying is there's all these voices in my head and I need to listen to the one that got me here. And so, of course, the reaction to that is Justin Fields blames coaches. And like, I guess, and perhaps Mina, this is me being overly defensive of football players. I like it when a guy tries to take the time to answer a question. And the worst thing for me as a person who covers football is for 32 Matt Ryans to step to the mic and say absolutely nothing every single chance that they get. But what happened here today I think it was Justin Fields, was trying to answer a question while also trying to figure out why he's playing so bad and why the team is so bad. Because he's not going to say, well, guys, you know, I'm just a bad football player. I'm never going to play football well.
I just suck. I'm really slow to pull the trigger. Y'all see it. Y'all watch the tape.
Look at that. And like, that's me. Imagine you watching yourself suck at your job. But yeah. And so, like, I do think, of course, there's reaction. And then so Justin Fields comes out, and then there's going to be the idea that Fields is blaming the media, which is a massive entity comprised of hundreds of thousands of people who are just trying to eat, right? And so, yeah, of course, there's going to be some people that take it the wrong way, that take things out of context. And then there's also going to be some people that are just doing their job. Ultimately, the Bears are bad. The Bears offense is morose. And I tried to look up, I'm like, let me see if I could try to quantify this. I looked at third downs between 5 and 10 yards to go, where Justin Fields is taking shots downfield. He's attempted one pass over 20 yards this season. He completed it. And I'm thinking, okay, so last year he may have been just airing it out so much more. He only attempted 3 of those passes last year in the entire season. I'm not sure in terms of throwing the ball, how much different the results are for Justin Fields. Now, clearly running the ball has been different, but everybody has said it and everybody's right. It takes a village to be this bad. Like, that was true for the 2022 Denver Broncos. Yeah. It's true for the Bears. But are we making statements about the long-term viability of Justin Fields, considering what's around him? I don't know that it's fair to do that at this point.
Well, I think the problem is when you're 3 years into it, you do have to start making those statements, even if it is not fair. I think this is one of those one of those many things can be true at once situations.
Definitely.
And unfortunately, you know, even if it's true that there's backups in the offensive line, it's terrible. The guards are out. The left tackle's regressed a little bit, perhaps predictably. The non-DJ Moores are not doing much. You know, you can talk about Kmet and Claypool and then, like, the play calling is bizarre and confusing. Everybody's, someone has just yet to explain to me why he's only carried the football like 4 times. I don't, like, just explain, like, I have yet to hear, maybe Getsy's been asked about it. I don't understand it. And then just the profusion of screens and culminating, of course, in that pick 6, which was very predictable. All of that is real. But then at the same time, when you watch Fields, there are guys open sometimes. what's so puzzling, I thought my colleague Dan Orlovsky did a really nice breakdown. He was putting up some tape from End Zone View and just watching Fields' helmet. And it's inaccurate to say that he can't read the field because he is looking at the targets. Yeah. He is looking in the right direction and he just won't throw it. And I think that's what, like, if I don't know if he's afraid of turning the ball over. I don't know if it's he doesn't trust the receivers. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know. He's always had a bit of a slower release. He's always held on to the football a little bit longer. It's never looked like this, Patrick. It's never looked the way it's looked these first 2 weeks.
If you do want, like, a positive, because it's hard to find one, he threw for 104 yards with 118 passer rating when targeting DJ Moore. So, like, yay. Like, that's it. But as you mentioned, he has to actually throw the ball. And it was a thing that I pointed out last year with Trevor Lawrence when there was the early start, right? And it's like, is Trev it? Like, Trev was getting to the right read. He was choosing the right throw. He just wasn't hitting it. And you could at least say, like, hey, Trev's getting these balls, but he's not getting them down fast enough. He's not getting them over the linebacker, but he's making the right choice. Fields is, like Dan said, he's looking there. But we have to get him to throw. And maybe that's a part of what his explanation was is, yeah, I'm looking at the same thing you guys are. I'm seeing it. I don't know why it's not happening. But the fact that he doesn't know and he's like, maybe it's this. He's having to think a while on it. Then that's even more concerning. I'm not giving up, though.
It's 2 weeks. You know, we're not. It's too early to say anything about anyone definitively. I don't feel great about this week because I don't know if you heard me mention the guards. Chris Jones is coming to town.
He's back. He's got incentives now.
Oh my God, he looked amazing against Jacksonville. They're also like the thing that really jumped out to me watching the Jags is like he did some of his best work on the edge because Steve Spagnuolo that week clearly circled the right tag, I forget his name, with Anton Harrison. They use him to basically get the matchups that they want, and then if they get double teams, the other guys are good enough, I think, to benefit from it. And I don't, this Bears offensive line is just atrocious. So I think Fields is gonna, unless he just goes completely nuclear on the ground, which is a possible,
which he might, which may have been which may have been the message that he's trying to send to all of Chicago and maybe Kansas City, like, hey, I'm getting out of there, I'm hitting my back foot, and it's either DJ Moore or I'm out.
I think that's what I'd like to see. Just go nuts, man. Turn it over. I don't care. Just throw the ball.
Yeah.
Nuts. Use your legs.
Week one, yeah. YOLO Josh Allen. That's it. Be that guy.
I think this is a pretty good bounce back opportunity for the Chiefs offense and their side. We don't have to get into it too much. It hasn't looked perfect. Obviously, Kelce, I don't think, is 100%. I think they're still kind of figuring some stuff out. The offensive line was a big problem against Jacksonville. The Bears pass rush ought to be a cure-all for that. The Bears are like strong at linebacker, which is where they threw a ton of money and pretty much nowhere else. So, yeah, I think this will be a nice one for Mahomes.
They're 32nd in pass defensive EPA right now. But on top of that, they're also 31st in run defense EPA.
Oh, nice. So, yeah.
Hey, could always get worse.
Jeez. Oh, I'm so sorry, Bears fans. I don't know what to say. I really don't. I guess it's better to be... here's my spin zone.
Okay.
It's better to be cosmically bad than just kind of bad as a football team in some ways, because then, you got to fix things and people have to be replaced and... Like, if Fields plays at this level, at least you'll know, at least you'll know what to do going forward.
It's better. It's better to know than to not know. Right. Maybe that's it. And sorry to, the 97-year-old Bears fan who's like, one more run. I don't know. I just.
Spin zone. Bryce Young doesn't look that great. No, I'm just kidding.
We haven't abolished the draft yet, Bears fans. So, yeah. Good things could come from losing.
Well, that's the ultimate spin zone. Yeah, this looks like an electric quarterback draft. So, they have their first round pick, right? They only traded this last for DJ Moore. It was this one. So, they got DJ Moore. They didn't trade. They got the picks. So,
and they'll have ammunition perhaps if they want to.
If things continue down this path, I mean. Like, do the Bears look better than the Cardinals?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not even close.
Yeah. Have you seen any Caleb Williams Bears photoshops in the wild?
Well, I think because Caleb and his father came out, right, and they had those statements. And clearly they were in reference to the Arizona Cardinals, and somebody could probably come back and just substitute Bears in there. At this point,
8 days ago, the first headline that comes up: Bears projected to have two top five picks in the draft. Wait, what am I forgetting? They have their. Did they get a future first? Oh yeah, they got the Panthers for.
Yeah, it was.
Yo,
it
was
all in that DJ Moore trade. So they get
totally
Moore.
Forgot. I'm sorry. It was that's great. They look bad too. Yeah. Okay. Wow. We found the spin zone, Bears fans.
Yeah.
You're going to have all the ammunition, two first rounders, both of which could be great. Have you been watching college football? These kids look awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you could trade up one pick and move up and take Mitchell Trubisky. It could always be better. It could always get worse.
Okay. Bills Commander. That won't be the last time I talk about the Bears. I will revisit whether anything happens with Fields and this, we're joking about, we're not really joking. We're not joking, but we are joking.
Yes.
Bills Commanders, I think, is a really good game. I enjoyed watching both of these quarterbacks a lot week two. Let's start with the Allen side of things, because it was against the Raiders, which is a very important caveat and also explains why nobody really seemed to care. He was incredible in week two. And Patrick, most importantly about this Josh Allen week two performances, he actually, I thought, looked kind of like he did in the beginning, the first half of the 2022 season, where he was just playing within himself. He was not pushing the ball unnecessarily. He pushed the ball downfield at times, but he was not taking unnecessary risks. He had a 4.9 average depth of target, 4.9 air yards per attempt. He went 26 for 28 on passes under 10 yards for 169 yards and 3 touchdowns. He was just extremely efficient. And I think not only is that good to see, obviously, after the week one YOLO meltdown, but it's very relevant against the Commanders team, where the pass rush is obviously the strength of the team. I think that pass rush will present problems for the Bills offensive line. So if we get this version of the exact version of Josh we saw in week one, spread the ball around, dink and dunk, make plays with your legs when you need to, I think that it's exactly what they needed going into this game.
Yeah, and I think sometimes off-season stories, like we see Stephon Diggs frustrated that they lose a playoff game. Well, yeah, they just lost a playoff game. And so this narrative builds in our heads. Like, oh, this is all about to fall apart. They're still really good football players. And if you look at Josh Allen's, even against the Jets in week one, less than 15 yards, he did the same thing. He only had 5 incompletions. He's throwing touchdowns in there. The problem in week one was, again, YOLO Josh, who we love. YOLO Josh. YOLO Josh is great TV. But when you're playing against a good defense, you just can't have YOLO Josh out there. And I felt like against Las Vegas, there was an opportunity for him to just be sometimes check down Josh. But YOLO Josh still made an appearance. He's throwing that ball back across his body where it's like, wait, Josh, we're not doing that this week. And he hits it. And that's Josh. But we ultimately can't always just say that's Josh. But this team is still really good. And as long as he does that, I think this Commanders defense, while in spots it doesn't necessarily have the stars, especially in the secondary, that the Jets defense has, it's very, very good. But Josh can do that again. It's a question of looking over on the other side with Sam Howell, especially in the second half last week. Yeah. That was his first 300-yard passing game. We're watching Kansas City kind of have some issues moving the ball, and then Eric Bieniemy's on the sideline and Sam Howell's making plays, and I'm starting to ask, you know, this – how much of continuity was this Matt Nagy Eric Bieniemy switch? You know, but you know, we're all not on the Chiefs anymore. I'm excited for the game because I want to see what the development of Sam Howell is going to be, because there's been a lot to feel good about in the first couple.
Yeah, I think the Bills defense will be more of a test for Howell than what he has played thus far. Mm-hmm. Arizona week one, Denver. I think I am starting to have some real question marks about that defense and some of the. They just seem to be, there just seems to be a lot of holes. Still, like, you know, you got Surtain, obviously he's amazing, and Justin Simmons and whatnot, but there's some issues and the pass rush isn't fantastic. I think for Buffalo, my concern in playing Howell based on what I've seen thus far is if he's kept clean, he's really good. I mean, the dude has a rocket arm. He has, I thought, done a pretty good job reading defenses, going through his progressions. I think the offense is very well coordinated. When he's been kept clean, he has ranked 7th in QBR and 3rd in on-target rate thus far. And while I think the Bills' defense is good, watching them against Vegas, pass rush isn't that great, dude, without Von Miller. So if they can't disrupt him, I think that they could be in for, you know, this could be like the, right now, I would say the Washington offense, it's kind of like bubbling. There's kind of like a low murmur of excitement around it. And people are like, ooh, like that second half, Sam Howell, Eric Bieniemy, these pass catchers. If they put up those kinds of numbers against the Bills defense,
watch out.
I think it becomes a much bigger story because of our perceptions of that defense being very fundamentally sound.
When you consider the fact that there's 7 2-0 teams in the NFC right now, 3 of them are in the East. And so, like, there's that road ahead for Washington. But this would, in terms of the valuation, in terms of how we feel about it, it would certainly change things. I do look at Buffalo when it comes to pressuring Sam Howell. That, like, Sean's not blitzing a lot. this season. He's 29th. And I think there's belief in those edges, and we saw them, right? We saw how Aaron Rodgers' season came to an end. I'm not quite sold on their ability to get pressure before, but yeah. I mean, that changes once Vaughn gets back, and they're only going to be deeper in that capacity. And so like it's a long season, but I think we're going to learn. We're going to learn a lot about the Bills defense and maybe the Commanders offense. It could be both.
The one thing that I think helps Buffalo a lot is I think the run defense has been really good. I mean, I think they held Josh Jacobs to like, it was something insane. Some of that was bad run blocking on the part of Vegas. It was -2 yards on 9 carries, which was a rebound performance after, you know, Breece Hall ran all over them. But the front of that, the defensive line, the interior is very stout. I think there's, however, questions behind them at linebacker in terms of size, and they play a lot of nickel.
95% so I'll be curious nickel, to see if they. It's nuts, but they're always in
there. So I'll be curious to see if Bieniemy kind of puts that to the test, because the run game also against Denver looked very good. So I still got Buffalo in this one. I think that especially on the other side of the ball, I was just really encouraged by what I saw from Josh Allen in week 2. I think the defense is going to give Howell a harder time than what he's faced so far. But this is one where I'm like, I wouldn't pick it. I mean, I don't know what the line is. I'll see them when I get to the final segment. It feels like it could be, you know, like a little bit, just based on what I've seen out of Washington thus far in the offense, it feels like it could be a little spicier than maybe people think.
And while we feel so great about the Commanders defense, they did also give up those 21 points right off the bat to Russ and Sean Payton and company.
I think that's where it's for Allen. It's going to be like about finding that balance between what we talked about, which is that kind of like dice him up, get the ball out quick, neutralize the pass rush. But you can beat like Gabe Davis should be able to burn whatever Washington corner is on him once or twice a game for big plays. And that's always the thing with Josh, right? It's kind of like finding that balance.
It's must see every time though.
I also think, by the way, I was say watching Washington, I think the linebackers in coverage are still a weakness, and that is something the Bills have been playing a ton of 2 tight ends. So I think there's something to, although teams don't really respect it, but there's something you can kind of exploit through the air. Okay, let's do Patriots Jets next.
Let's do it.
Should we start on the Zach Wilson side or the other side?
Let's start on the other side. Mac Jones, since week 16 last year, has more touchdown passes than anybody in the NFL. He's got 11 since week 16 of last year. And so it's like towards the end of the Patricia era and the start of the Bill O'Brien era, this Bailey Zappi thing feels like 600 years ago. It should have
does. It really does.
It should have never happened.
What a great stat.
But yeah.
That sets up my my gentle take, which is that Mac Jones is actually playing okay right now. Do you agree?
That's the gentlest, most cuddly room temperature take to me, especially when you consider that, like, if you go back to 2020, the New England Patriots are 1-17 when they give up 25 points. It hasn't been very Belichickian, but like when they have been, when the defense was very good last year, the offense was very bad. And I think they ran into a schedule issue here where we're going to look at the first 2 weeks for the New England Patriots and be like, that wasn't fair. It wasn't fair for the way we were evaluating things, considering what they were up against in the first 2 games of the season. Like, maybe they should have changed all the Brady honorifics to a few weeks down the road and not lead off with that. But also, maybe there's some issues with talent on the outside. I don't know that Juju is really providing what they wanted. And, maybe Booty comes along a little bit more. Maybe he can get some more action. I think he was a healthy scratch in week 2, if I'm not mistaken.
DeMario Douglas is the guy who is kind of like this week's Patriots litmus test, because he, you know, the disparity in talent and skill players between New England and Miami is about as dramatic as it gets in the NFL, and that was very much on display last week. Douglas only has a couple targets. I think, you know, one was a screen, but he looks like he has some juice. Then he fumbles and Belichick disappears him. So they've all been asked about it this week. And that's the problem. That's the problem with this offense. Like, I guess, you know, when I was trying to say, I think Mac Jones has looked okay. I thought last week he showed some playmaking ability, some creativity. He looks better under pressure. You know, his arm is still not great, but I thought he made some pretty good tight window throws, especially between the numbers. The problem is this Patriots offense is so tight. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it feels like every pass has to be completed or the drive is over. No one's really, I mean, there's no plays downfield. And some of that's on Mac, some of that's on the skill players. But the, you know, the net of it is they're an offense that's kind of efficient and, you know, they're good with their tight ends. I think they can look better running the ball when the offensive line gets healthy than they've been, but they're not explosive. That said, Patrick, I would contend that's not a terrible formula against the New York Jets.
No. Anything, honestly, can work. Considering, especially, I mean, look at what we saw on Monday night, right? You had a Steelers team that didn't snap the ball on the other side of the other team's 30, and they still won. And that was the whole game. And so, like, other than Garrett Wilson catching a ball that should have never been caught, or Malik Hooker taking a bad angle on a slant, like, what's the – you've got one Breece Hall carry down the sideline, and I'm trying to think of Jets offensive plays, and those are the only ones that really come up. Maybe there's a Garrett Wilson ball in the opener that Zach Wilson threw where he curled up in the zone on the right side of the field. It's just – nothing comes easy, and it has to be spectacular. And, you know, Garrett Wilson is dealing with a quarterback who's 32nd in a whole bunch in so many statistical categories since he entered the league. So where do you go?
This feels like the right time to recap Zach Wilson's tortured history against the New England Patriots as we enter this game. Truly a house of horrors for young Zach, this defense. Last year, was it Halloween week one? I'm always, or there was the Darnold game on Halloween, or it was close to Halloween because all the headlines were the like, ghosts. Zach Wilson's seeing ghosts out there, you know. Although Darnold was the icy ghost guy. But anyways, last year against New England, Zach Wilson had a QBR of 22. He completed less than half of his passes. He had a 31% off-target rate, which is insane. When he was pressured, and he was pressured a lot, he averaged -0.19 yards per dropback against New England over two games with a QBR 0.9.
It's not good.
The first game was when he threw all the picks. The second game, he went 9 for 22 for 77 yards. So I went back and looked through my notes to kind of remember what happened. And both times the Pats, they got him a lot with some pretty creative blitzes. It was very obvious that they wanted to flush him out of the pocket and turn him into someone who they wanted him to throw on the run. But they had a spy to keep him from taking off, which, by the way, is something he can do. Against in week two against Dallas, even. But they were like, no, we want you to, we're perfectly content with you breaking the pocket, and then we want you to do dumb things. And that is, he obliged. And candidly, like, they play a lot of man coverage. I suspect they're going to take a pretty similar approach this time. I mean, the thing about Zach Wilson, and I've been accused of being too hard on him, is he actually is much better in structure when the ball comes out quickly. This is like a misconception that he like should be playing playground ball. No, bad things happen when he holds on to the football, and New England wants him to hold on to the football.
It takes me back to week one, you know, where there's a screen that gets blown up, and then Zach Wilson, for some reason, retreats 25 yards down the field. It's a screen pass. There's literally nothing good that can happen. There's offensive linemen downfield. He's spinning around and trying to make a play that literally cannot happen. And it happened a couple of times. There was the Micah Parsons pressure in week two where he just throws the ball to Jayron Kearse, just kind of panics and runs, and then flips it out there, and Jayron's there. It's that first – once that first read gets taken away, and then he comes back and it's like, all right, like the old the old Robbie Callen tweet about it's Jordan Clarkson time. Like, he gets, it's like, all right, it's Zach Wilson time. And he goes to make a play. And it's like, Zach, that's not you. Like, when has this worked? But it continues to happen. I think maybe, well, the best chance is to not have that happen. Like, go ahead, take the sack, put your head down.
Take the sack.
Just try to get a few yards. But when he tries to make that extra play, I'm trying to think of when it has worked. I don't know. And then he makes that fade throw in structure and it was bad. And Garrett Wilson comes up with it. So, like, get the ball out of your hands and see if these guys who are very good, like, Breece looks great coming back. Breece Hall's leading the NFL in yards per carry still, even after that game against the Cowboys. Just try to not get in the way, which is a weird thing to say, which is why I think Joe Douglas should be on the phone. You know, like, Sam Howell's doing great. If Washington doesn't mind not having a backup quarterback, like, free Jacoby.
Don't get me started. By the way, I didn't mention this earlier in the week when Dominique and I were talking about how Dak Prescott was excellent against the Jets. He had a QBR of 7, a QBR that has not been matched against the Jets defense since Jacoby Brissett did it in September 2022. I think, like, the formula is for Zach is kind of what we're saying, which is ball out quick. I really think he looks fine when the ball comes out quick. The ball to Wilson was a good ball. I mean, you know, Wilson obviously did most of the work, but it was a good ball. Yeah. It was a good ball. Get that ball out quick. They're probably going to, I imagine, have a very heavy focus on the run game and take those sacks, man. Don't try to Leroy Jenkins in it, because that is when bad things have happened against this defense. All of that said, this is a tricky one because the Jets defense is so good and because the Patriots offense, while, you know, I think you and I both agree, like, Mac Jones hasn't been playing, like, bad football. They're very constricted in what they do. This probably, you know, it feels ugly and low scoring, which are not games that I love to pick. I probably lean New England just because of Wilson's history against this defense and the turnovers, but I don't feel great about it.
I tend to feel better than you do about the game for New England, considering the fact that the thing that they have to do, the problem that we talked about the offense, is they're having to convert third and fives, third and sixes all the way down the field. It's also the thing that you need to do against the Jets. Yeah. Like, it's what Dak was able to do. It's what Josh was kind of able to do if he wasn't turning the ball over. So, like, they've got plenty of work at this.
You know, like, dink and dunk.
If we're, but that also means, like, hey, Kendrick Bourne, like, go beat Sauce, you know, 9 times on this. So it's like,
but, well, I do think they've looked good throwing to the tight ends. Hunter Henry, I think, has been good in that offense. And that is the one area that where the Jets have over the last year and change struggled a little bit to defend. So smash those Hunter Henry overs, folks. Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about an AFC South clash featuring a young quarterback that I'm kind of excited to talk about. Not Trevor Lawrence.
Oh.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
Texans Jags.
Oh, yeah.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I want to start on the Texans side. Because it took me a second to watch C.J. Stroud week 2 against Indianapolis. I loved it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's too strong. But I thought he played really well. And I, you know, it's I think I mentioned, I haven't gotten to the Texans at all. But in the Baltimore game, I actually thought, despite being under siege, he flashed some stuff. He battled through it. And then in this game, again, he was totally under siege. He was pressured on nearly 50% of dropbacks, sacked 6 times, and yet despite that, he threw for 384 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, with a plus 4.2% completion percentage over expectation, which I think is notable. He was exceptional throwing to the intermediate part of the field. I don't know. I've just been really impressed. I mean, he was playing behind like a very makeshift offensive line. Everybody out, Tunsil out, Howard out. Center's still hurt, but I feel like the early returns on CJ Stroud shows the accuracy and touch we expected from college, and what I didn't necessarily expect, Patrick, which is playing well in the face of adversity and pressure. So if I'm a Texans fan, I feel pretty good with what I've seen from the number 2 overall pick.
And you should feel really good. Like the Texans fans have watched Nico Collins here for the past 3 years. He had two of his best games in his entire career have been with CJ Stroud playing in his first 2 NFL games ever. And that's with an under center percentage. Like CJ Stroud is under center, right? From Ohio State, where they're in shotgun almost all the time. He's under center 37% of the time. Like he's doing all of this, and he's also adjusting to the NFL, he's adjusting to new play structure with new teammates, and he's been very successful in the first 2 weeks. And of course, like you look over the other side, Anthony Richardson celebrating, he's going to the end zone. It's like, yeah, this guy's playing way better than anybody else. But then it's like, this is why like QB wins. You can't always, as good as Richardson has been, like CJ is, we're you know, D'Amico's going to figure out this defense. Like things are going to be a little bit better in Houston. But in terms of like what CJ Stroud has done, you have to feel really good about it, and they should.
You mentioned Nico Collins. I think, look, Stroud is doing things better than Young right now on his own, I think, in terms of like the playmaking in particular, you know, I think, and the throws he's making on the move and the accuracy, certainly. But watching these two offenses, watching Carolina on Monday and then watching the Texans tape, I vastly prefer these Texans playmakers. Oh, my God. You know, I think Woods and Dell are definitely useful players at minimum. And then Nico Collins, in this game to me, I posted one of his many catches. He looks like a legit number one playing with CJ Stroud in terms of the size, the separation, the speed, the route running ability, the hands he creates. And like, it's when you watch them, which does not exist in Carolina, by the way. Yeah. And you're like, oh, it feels like there's a young core. I think the Jags pass rush will give the offensive line trouble. They've looked pretty good through the first 2 weeks, but I just love the way they're trending. Even it's very early, but it feels like, okay, at least there's like talent here for Bobby Slowick to work with so that he can exploit some of the mismatches in this game.
And CJ Stroud is doing this while getting nothing in the run game.
Oh my God.
Damian Pierce he actually has more yards after contact than he does, like considering before contact as well. Like people are getting.
He is in hell, by the way. He is in absolute hell out there.
It makes me think of rookie season Najee, where there's all these screenshots of like him taking the ball and there being 12 defenders, like 15 defenders in his face. Like that's what it seems like for Damian Pierce. I think, of course, there's so many Shanahan system guys proliferating through the NFL, and like Bobby Slowick is another one, but the run game will come and I think things will get better. And then maybe you get a little more play action, which is going to be a little better for the rookie quarterback.
Yeah. And as you said, this is obviously such an important part usually of this type of offense. Yeah. Pierce, I have him on one of my fantasy teams, so I'm all too familiar with the lack of production. I just pulled out of curiosity, Next Gen Stats does expected yards per carry, which is how you get rushing yards over expected based on the blocking and, you know, what defenses are doing. And they have him as second worst in the NFL right now behind Josh Jacobs. It's not great, and it's largely attributable to what, you know, I said at the top of the offensive line is all back up. So I think to your point, it will get better. The offensive line will get better. I think that's what's so encouraging, frankly, Patrick, is like we're seeing all these glimpses and these good throws with no run game and a ramshackle offensive line. I don't know who's playing this week, if there anyone's necessarily coming back, if Tunsil's coming back anytime soon. The Jags defense, I thought, looked pretty good against Kansas City. There's still some holes, but the pass rush has looked better. I think safety's played really well, but, you know, there's definitely, like, there's places you can attack in terms of the cornerbacks, and I wouldn't be surprised if they can find ways to move the ball on them through the air.
Yeah, it was a strong showing against Kansas City, especially looking back to that week one game. In Indianapolis against a quarterback playing in his very first NFL game. And there were like the turnover in Jacksonville, they adjust, they bring in Calvin Ridley. They add strength on strength. And over on the defensive side, it's like, well, we're just going to need everybody that was here to improve. And there was, you know, some real concern that, well, none of that happened in week one. I think we can feel better considering what they did against Kansas City in that game at home. But they also saw Josh Allen get shut out against KC, even with the problems that KC had, and Juwan Taylor's getting taken out of the game. He's, you know, the most scrutinized player in the NFL right now is Juwan Taylor for some reason. But it's ultimately, can they do enough on defense and just hope to outscore the opponent over on the other side? And they have the talent to do it.
Big if true, Patrick.
They got to score more points. They need to score more points. You know,
ultimately, they got to stop them on defense and outscore the opponents. No, I'm just teasing you. Let's hone in on that, though. Let's hone in on that. Through 2 weeks, the Jags are 31st in offensive EPA per play. Don't think anyone saw that coming. What is your panic level with this Jags offense?
If it was happening with Cam Robinson back, then I would be in a full five alarm panic. I think there's some clear struggles. The numbers have all gone. If you go and see what Travis Etienne's numbers were running behind Cam Robinson last year, it's his absence is huge. It may be more impactful than any other in terms of the results, right? Because we've seen clearly Cleveland had a problem up front in the game Monday night, but in terms of an offense that could go from to wow, I think Cam Robinson probably can have that big impact in Jacksonville. So I'm not super worried. I think Doug and Trev and them will ultimately get this thing figured out. But when you can't rely on those big chunk plays in the run game, that's a huge problem. Because we've seen Etienne do it time and time again. I don't think they forgot, and he still looks explosive.
Yeah, I think you're right about the offensive line, and like it's just been bad, and it's so bad that Trevor Lawrence, who got the ball in 2.43 second time to throw against Kansas City, still got sacked a zillion times, which, as often I discuss, does not happen to Trevor Lawrence. Like, Trevor Lawrence doesn't take sacks. That is his superpower. But right now, this line is playing so poorly that he is dealing with a lot of pressure, and there are negative plays. The run game, as you said, is a major issue. I would describe my level of concern as not mild, not medium, maybe like in between mild and medium. One thing I am curious about, Doug Peterson's not calling plays this year. He handed over play calling responsibilities to Press Taylor. I'm not watching them and thinking like, oh my God, what are they doing? Why did they call that? Nobody's open. But, you know, when you start off, when you go into this season with these kinds of expectations and you start off so poorly, that's something that I think does deserve some scrutiny. But, you know, like the Chiefs game was so weird, dude. Like they fumbled. There's like a zillion weird plays and turnovers, and they were awful in the red zone, but they were like 18 inches off of scoring like five times. I don't know. It just kind of felt weird. I feel like they're talented enough to where I'm not like freaking out. I also think, based on what we saw from the Texans defenses last week, which I was kind of like optimistic about week one, there's a real bounce back opportunity. The Texans defense did not get a lot of pressure last week against Indianapolis. And so I think that'll be a little bit easier for them up front. Safeties have been hurt. Could be a big Evan Ingram game. This to me, for Trevor and this offense as a whole, is a real bounce back opportunity. If they don't play well this week, then I think we can start, like, you know, having the talks about Doug Peterson and the play calling and all that.
Yeah, and I think, right, Doug, if anybody can handle that transition to go back, yeah. I think it could be Doug Peterson. But they, you know, they had their issues early on last season as well.
That's true.
It's hard. I just keep going back to up front and the personnel. I think Cam gets back. We're going to see a better offense, at least a better run game, and that's going to open things up for everything else.
I'm going to take the Jags just because I think that this is the week where they, you know, Lawrence kind of finally, you know, he gets back to looking like Trevor Lawrence. Very difficult game to pick, in my opinion, Falcons-Lions. Very interesting game. They're not similar team. They're kind of similar. They have similarities offensively, both very creative, both very interesting with their personnel groupings. Let's start there. Let's start with the Falcons offense. My question for you, kind of leading into this, is based on what we've seen so far from this offense, which is to say it's creative, Bijan Robinson is the truth.
Yes.
Do you think we need more from Desmond Ridder in this one? Like, do you think, like, last week, a little better than the previous week, actually tried to push the ball downfield, which was nice? Or do you think, because of the nature of the Lions defense or this matchup or whatever, you don't really need that much out of Ridder?
Well, I think we saw a willingness, right? Desmond Ridder was asked to do more, especially late in that game against the Packers. And he came through. I think he answered a lot of questions there. Maybe you could ask some of the questions instead to the Packers defense down the stretch. But still, you know, those were the plays to be made, and Desmond Ridder made those plays. Looking back, because I coming into the Seahawks-Lions game, which was the score fest last year, and it's like, well, who improved? Who improved the most on defense? And I thought it was going to be Detroit, but, it, you know, Geno ultimately made the plays. And can we ask Desmond Ridder right now, 2023, to execute like Geno Smith? No, I don't think we can. But is the offense built around him good enough to have him, you know, execute to the level he did last week? I've got Detroit in this game. I'm a little bit more believing in the Lions and Goff. Shout out to Goff.
We'll get to Goff. Yeah.
But in terms of the way that I'm looking at this Falcons team, there's more questions for them, especially when we look at the Kyle Pitts usage and how the Lions have struggled against tight ends, and we've been waiting.
Great point.
We've been waiting for so long. If not now, Mina. If not now,
dude.
When?
So last week, Seattle had a ton of success against Detroit in their 12 and 13 personnel groupings, which is something Seattle does very well, something they did very well last year. They shredded them. Geno Smith was fantastic. I think they averaged over 12 yards per pass play out of those groups, and they played them a lot. The Falcons used 12 and 13 more than anyone in the NFL when you add them together, and they're fifth in EPA per play when they do so. What's interesting, though, and this is kind of cuts to what you just said, is they don't actually throw to their tight ends, Adam, or they actually have it this year, you know? Like Bijan has been targeted more, I think, out of their 12 and 13 groupings than any of the tight ends, which I am always an advocate of throwing to Bijan Robinson, who plays football the way I think I do in my dreams. But I'll be like, is this it? Because clearly this is a vulnerability with Detroit. Seattle got them in their base personnel a lot out of those groups. So they were able to get the matchups on the linebackers they wanted. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is out in this game. Are we going to throw to the tight ends in this one? I mean, it might not matter because even Bijan on linebacker is a great matchup. And they're, I think, they showed last week a willingness to throw to London, which was nice, and he rewarded them for it. But I'm very curious to see because that is I really think that's an area in this Lions defense that you can attack.
And perhaps, especially when you consider the game planning, because Arthur Smith will be the first person to tell you, like, hey, I don't care. We're just trying to win. I don't care about fantasy. But Kyle Pitts, it's clear, right, is a very gifted football player. How is he going to be utilized in this game? How is he going to be utilized for this team? Like, is he a valuable asset to be had on this offense? And if not this week against Detroit, then at what point do we say, well, maybe, like, do you want Kyle Pitts to play somewhere else? Because he's getting separation. He saw more uncatchable targets than any player in the NFL last year with Marcus Mariota at quarterback. He's been open in spots this season. Just trying to figure it out. Like, what's
I saw a tweet that was like a joke fantasy tweet that was like, I'm never going to give up on Kyle Pitts. He could be in prison and I'm still on my team. And that is how it is at this point for those of us who have him on our teams. I on the other side of the ball, the Falcons defense has been good, but I do think they benefited from competition, and Detroit presents a very different challenge from the teams that they've played thus far, which, you know, the Packers offense is feisty, but I think Detroit's just kind of a different animal altogether. It's been interesting to watch them kind of early on because it's a new defensive coordinator, Ryan Nielsen, more man coverage. They put a lot of man coverage. I think the free agent acquisitions have played very well, but what ultimately tilts this one for me and why I think I'm going to probably pick Detroit is, with Goff, when he's kept clean, he's awesome. You got to pressure Jared Goff. And the Falcons currently rank dead last in pressure rate, 21.4%. So unless Kaden Ellis and company really step it up, I feel like Goff's going to be able to move the ball.
It should be. And I do owe Jared Goff a huge apology because on game debut, I said, Jared Goff's interception streak is going to stay through. You can count on it. Jared Goff would never allow himself to let all of you down. And of course, a little bit of pressure gets to Goff, and he flips it out and it gets picked off, much to your joy, I'm sure. I was heartbroken over it. Cynthia Freeland was going to come on the show in a lion costume. Everything was going to be perfect, but ultimately it didn't go right. But Jared has made decisions under pressure spectacularly, going all the way back, even before the streak even started. He's been very good, and we still have to – I don't know if it's a narrative, because there was that issue with the Rams, and they were bad. He and Sean weren't necessarily on the same page. They make the Stafford trade. It was a great trade. You could say a great trade for both teams. But the view of Jared Goff needs to finally shift to pass. Like, Jared Goff is just a competent quarterback who can – like, Jared Goff in certain situations is very, very good. He's past that. It's not just managing the game. Like, Jared can make plays. And to a certain extent, I would like to see Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson get Jared Goff a little bit more to try to get just that extra bit out of this offense.
I don't know about that, but
I want Max Jared, Mina.
Jared's playing really well when he's protected, and he is very well protected in this offense. I mean, the offensive line is amazing. Watching them against Seattle, they still definitely lack a threat on the perimeter, but I don't think it matters too much in this game because I think that their usual, Jared's so good throwing over the middle of the field, and I think that stuff will all be there. Their play action game will work. St. Brown, I think he's always a little banged up, but I think he's fine. The tight end, the rookie tight end, Laporta, I thought looked really good against Seattle, breaking tackles. Feels like they're still kind of figuring out how to use Gibbs. But again, I just think as much as I do think that the Falcons defense is playing better and there's like competent players now at every level, I still think that the Lions will be able to move the ball on them. So I don't know. It could be high scoring again, but I will take Detroit. And that brings us to our last game, which is the most cursed game of the week. It's truly, I was trying to think of an analogy for like, you know, when like two cursed things meet each other. I couldn't think of anything. Two people with really, really bad luck. Somebody has to win this game between the Chargers and the Vikings. This feels like a must-win game, Patrick, for both sides. It is, though, right? Like, you know, you can't start 0-3, and certainly I think can't, given these teams' histories and their expectations and all of that. We talked about the Chargers. Dominique and I talked about the Chargers and sort of their struggles at the beginning of thus far in the season on Tuesday. One thing we kind of skipped over or didn't really get into too much was the offense, which has largely been fine. I think that's kind of what's made this sort of puzzling. I mean, they're fifth in EPA per play right now. Week one, they ran the ball really well. Less so week two, Eckler was out. He's day-to-day. I think his availability will definitely have an impact on how I view this one, given what we've seen from the Vikings run defense so far. But I guess let's start on that side of the ball. Kellen Moore's offense, Justin Herbert, paid. Do you feel like this is one of those things where, yes, the numbers are really, really good, but it still feels like something's missing? Or do you think it's just because we're looking at it through the lens of the fact that they're 0-2?
Yeah, that lens is, of course, it's the most important one. But there's so much right contextualization that's possible. Right, it's like, oh, playoff loss for Justin Herbert. Well, we have to consider they had that lead in the first place, right? And here we are with a coach. And again, love Brandon Staley. Billed as a defensive genius, had in his prime Aaron Donald and in his prime Jalen Ramsey, and they were spectacular on the defensive side of the ball. Comes over, has a little bit older Khalil Mack. Bosa's there, Derwin's there, and you expect so much, but yet again, right? You know, teams are averaging 5 a carry again. Like, all of these things have continued to happen against this Chargers defense. And while, like, yeah, you could maybe point some fingers, but, like, they're making great decisions on offense. The fourth and go where Herbert's out on the edge, makes a play. Keenan Allen gets a touchdown against the Titans. This is all happening on the road. But yet again, like, down the stretch, you get diced up by Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
It's a thing that continues to happen. That talent, though, on the defensive side of the ball is why I feel a little bit better about their situation, because you also have to evaluate the schedule. And that trip to Tennessee, it's, you know, you could say it's a little tough, like maybe, well, you know, the Titans,
it makes me
feel, on the road in week one.
Yeah. It makes me feel better about the offense, because I think the Titans defense is good, but like you got diced up by Ryan Tannehill, y'all. I'll get to the defense in a second. I do think,
like Allen and Mike being healthy at the same time,
yes,
right? Like that's always going to work, and it's still working now. And for people who forgot, like how good Keenan Allen is on third down, like it's there. But also, there were some situations on third down where they could have used the target. You know, is that on Kellen? Is that on Justin? Like we've got to try to figure that out. But there's still some head scratching moments on the offense where and Dallas is fine, and you're like, wait. Maybe Mike McCarthy was.
What's going on here, right? Like, yeah, right. Is it Herbert's risk aversion? Is it because it really is the numbers are good. The offense is clicking through almost the entire game, and at the end, you know, like Justin Herbert with the ball in his hands and enough time to score. Like they should win. I don't know. Like it just, you know. I do think pressure was an issue against Tennessee. Tennessee's defensive line is very good. Minnesota's less good, but they do a bunch of crazy out front. So Herbert, since 2020, has been 6 in QBR against the blitz. Brian Flores is going to blitz. So I think, you know, that'll probably be a deciding factor in this one. One thing of note on the offense, Quentin Johnston is like barely played.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to soft launch this take here. All this smoke for Staley, you know, Herbert discussion. Tom Telesco. Just some choices have been made with this team. You talked about the defense. It's the GM. For the zone note, the defense being talented. A soft launch, another take.
Uh-oh.
Are they? Because watching the Titans tape, didn't get much of a pass rush against what should be the worst offensive line in the NFL, or one of them. A lot of the, like, you choose to pay J.C. Jackson, he's not playing well. I mean, they're like rotating the corners, which I think they just got to figure that out. That seems to be an issue. But, I mean, this deep, I've talked about this, the defense has been awful at stopping deep passes. We've seen with Minnesota, you saw this with Philadelphia, the interior of the Minnesota offensive line is an absolute nightmare, and everything else is awesome. That's how I feel. So it's like, unless you can get pass rush against this team, Kirk Cousins, like, I don't have faith in the ability of this pass defense to stop Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. Do you?
You're talking me into changing the pick.
I don't know what I'm going to pick. I haven't decided.
I'm thinking, you know, the talent and the Chargers, but now I'm imagining a situation where it's late in the game. Somebody needs a drive. Is it going to be Kirk? Where he's been successful sometimes. And then I don't know if I can trust Justin at this point or the offense in the offensive line. It's,
I mean, Justin Herbert's a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins, but I don't think either of these defenses are particularly great, particularly pass defense. I think if Eckler plays, I do think the Chargers will be able to run the ball with a lot of ease. We certainly saw that in the Eagles game. And then really for all their inability to stop the deep pass, the Chargers run defense has actually looked a little bit better finally this year. But yeah,
Eckler factor.
Yeah. Is big.
I think it changes the Titans game. You're a much better play caller, much better quarterback when Austin Eckler's on the field. And maybe that changes our entire view of the offense. But if there's, you know, no Austin, maybe this is a Vikings win. I gotta send some emails.
Did you see that? Did you see that? Somebody posted "throw the damn ball" on Twitter. Posted a chart that was like the percentage of throws QBs attempt to wide open windows, and it had Bryce Young as the least, which absolutely checks out, and it had Kirk Cousins as the second most right now behind Fields, but that's because he's only throwing screens. I mean, I think the combination of, I've said this all offseason, I continue to believe, of Jefferson, Addison, and Hawkinson is really hard to stop. Now, the way you stop it is by getting pressure because the offensive line sucks. But I don't know. I don't think they could do it.
And that's with, like, KJ Osborne had a couple drops last week as well. But Kirk Cousins, actually, another fun stat, he's the first quarterback in NFL history to start 0-2. Despite throwing for 700 yards, completing 70% of his passes, and having 6 touchdown passes in the first 2 games,
I'm Kirk pilled. I was saying this to Michael Jr. I'm gently testing the waters of Mac Jones isn't that bad. Kirk Cousins is his final form, right? Kirk, I
don't know
Kirk
how either one of them should feel about that.
No, I was Kirk pilled last year. I saw a picture of him today wearing like a hat for Alexander Madison's charity because, you know, Madison, all these horrible fans sent him like racist, terrible messages. I was like, Kirk, that's my guy. I'm Kirk. That's my guy, Kirk Cousins.
There's a lot of that the quarterback documentary did that for a lot of people. A lot of people watched that. And
he was the biggest winner by far. 100%.
I like Kirk Cousins now.
100%. Yes.
But And maybe it helps because people's like, oh, you know, Kirk's a stat guy, but they're losing. But it's like, okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I'm Kirkfield. Now he's like the ultimate, like, stats but not wins guy. He made some really nice throws against Philadelphia, yes. Some really pretty balls. Yeah, this one's going to come down to the wire for me. I think I'll probably still end up picking the Chargers because of the quarterback, and but I don't feel great about it at all. These are both cursed picks. Speaking of cursed picks, we are now at the final segment of the show where you help me make my picks. I have it in front of me. We've already made a few. Are you ready, Patrick? I am in first place. Ready. There's a lot on the line right now.
Oh, God. Okay.
I think I went 10-6 last week or something. Okay, this is just straight up. I'll tell you the lines, though. Okay, we start off. Oh, so I have to, the way we use this platform where I have to make key picks, they're called. Once you have to pick three that you're really confident about, and one of them is the Thursday night game for me. It is the San Francisco 49ers, who are favored by 10, against the New York Giants, who are missing both Saquon Barkley and, more notably, Andrew Thomas. Nick Bosa against question mark.
I'm not necessary here. I think the choice is clear. Although, after having the worst three halves that you could possibly have in the NFL, the Giants had the best one of the entire season against the Cardinals. These are not the Cardinals, though.
They're not the Cardinals. They're definitely not the Cardinals. Speaking of birds, we've got the Ravens. It's in Baltimore playing the Colts. The Ravens are favored by 7.5. Probably Gardner Minshew in this one.
Yeah.
Ravens missing a zillion players. Still going to pick Baltimore. Let me ask you this, though, really quickly, because you and I have griped about the Ravens offense privately for several years. How are you feeling through the first 2 weeks of the, oh my God, the Ravens have a slightly normal offense experience?
I'm thinking about putting a picture of Todd Monken up, like next to my kids, in the hallway over there. I'm so excited, Mina. I have seen some folks that are like, oh, look at Lamar Jackson. He's gotten better as a pocket pass. No. He's got guys in the pattern, and there's, you know, the route combinations make sense. And Zay has been incredible. It's so, my heart is full. I can't be stopped right now.
There's something just so soothing about watching a passing offense that's functional and on time. Look, Russell Wilson is responsible for some of the best moments of my football watching career. He was electric in Seattle, but he was a very, very frustrating quarterback to watch because of three and outs and sacks. Mm-hmm. And I was texting with my friend Danny Kelly and Jackson Bevis about this. We're CX fans, and we were just like, there's just something so soothing about watching Geno Smith throw the ball in 2.6 seconds and run a normal offense. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, he's just, you know, he's hitting the drag. It's just nice. Okay. Dolphins, Denver. The Denver heads to Miami. Dolphins are favored by 6.5. I'm going to take this one as a key pick. I'm going to take Miami. I really don't love what I've seen from this Denver defense so far.
No, it hasn't seemed good. And especially when you watched what Ejiro Evero and the Panthers defense did against Derek Carr on Monday night, it's like, wow. Like, we're going to be a year late on this Ejiro Evero head coaching discussion just so you can get him on the team, considering just how big the drop-off has been, right? We saw Washington come all the way back from 21-3. They'll be finished with 35 points, and it's like, what's wrong? What's changed? That's the most glaring to me. The Denver point differential on the season, though, is just 3 points.
Maybe this shouldn't be my key pick, but the Denver offense has been like better than actually it's being discussed, I feel like. And
yes,
I feel like Sean Payton's due for like a wily win. I'll still go Miami. I don't know how you stop the Miami offense. So we did Patriots at Jets. We picked the Patriots, who are favored by 2.5 in New York. We talked Jacksonville. The Texans are going there. Jags are favored by 9.5, which seems high, but I will take them. Ooh, Titans at Browns. Ooh, Browns are favored by 3.5. Oh, this is so gross. What a gross game.
I'm After seeing what I saw on Monday, I cannot on good conscience pick the Cleveland Browns to win a game. I might have gotten in trouble for tweeting a swear word when I saw what happened to Nick Chubb's knee.
Oh, okay.
It's awful, horrible. It's one of those things like the fact that we have to, like, this is the game that's making all this happen, making all these things in my life possible. And I hate when stuff like that happens to really good people. But then I see the offense short of Jerome Ford, like, figuring things out and running 69 yards down the sideline. It could have been 70, would have been a great play. Still was a great play regardless. But that's really it. That's really it. And Deshaun's holding on to the ball too long, and he escapes the pocket. And maybe in his mind, it's 2018 and he's getting away from guys, but he's hanging on to face masks. It's weird. Like, there's half of Amari Cooper, targets for Donovan Peoples-Jones, where he's doing cardio most of the game. I don't know what's going on, and I'm not picking them.
I hate both of these offenses so much, though. I think the Browns' defensive line is going to absolutely murder Tennessee. That's why I'm probably going to take Tennessee, and this just feels like a disgusting Vrabel win. But I feel like it's the Tennessee. I think the Browns' defense is going to put Ryan Tannehill in an absolute, who, you know, looked good against LA, but I don't know. Ugh, I'll take the Titans, though. Okay, so we talked about the Lions. We're rotating the Lions over the Falcons. They're only favored by 3.5 at home, so that's we're not the only ones who think that one's close. The Saints go to Green Bay. Packers are favored by 2. So basically leaning a little bit at Saints. This is tricky.
That's a game where I'm waiting to find out about Aaron Jones's ankle. I mean, hamstring.
Yeah, Watson is also, I think, practicing.
But there were clear spots in that game against Atlanta where, you know, at a certain point, it's not necessarily like excessive criticism for AJ Dillon, but perhaps that Aaron Jones has really been underappreciated in these past couple of seasons, and considering what he can do in the passing game as well. Jordan Love has been really good, and the Packers defense has some questions. I don't know if the Saints offense presents the kind of problems right now, considering their issues up front. I just need, if Aaron Jones is back, I'm going to take Green Bay in this one. But if not, I think that's enough to move it for me.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Packers. I think the Saints won't be able to get pressure on Love. The Saints pass rushers look good through the first 2 weeks, but I think a lot of that has had to do with the competition. I do not love what I saw from the Packers defense, though, last week.
No.
Okay, we brought the taking the Bills over the Commanders. Chargers-Vikings is a one-point game in Minnesota, so... Seattle is playing Carolina in Seattle. They're favored by 6. This is not Bryce Young slander. I guess it is. But when I saw that he's hurt and Andy Dalton might play, that made me extremely nervous because Andy Dalton is exactly the kind of backup quarterback who beats Seattle in the stupidest game of the year. I'll still take Seattle, but I feel awful about it.
Yeah, that's wounded fan talk.
You know? No, it's true. look up Drew Stanton record against Seattle.
This is not that team.
I actually think the offense will probably look better with Andy Dalton, which is not long-term Bryce Young impression. He's just a professional quarterback. You know?
Yeah, and you know, these things take time, ultimately there's problems. I think the QB sneak thing was weird. Like, that's a weird thing to discuss publicly, and then, like, to have Andy, like, it's like, oh, wait. But the Browns did that. Last year we saw Jacoby Brissett come in, and he was the QB sneak specialist, but there's, like, a body size and type difference between. But I guess if you want to say that Andy Dalton is to Bryce Young as Jacoby Brissett is to Deshaun Watson, like, is that what we're saying? I don't know, but I would be less concerned about Andy Dalton as not a wounded, hurt individual due to Drew Stanton and other things such as.
Okay, we're both taking the Chiefs or the Bears. That'll be my final key pick. It's an easy one. And Dallas over Arizona. That'll be my other key pick. I run out of key picks. I'm going to tip that one instead of Miami over Denver. Oh. That feels pretty safe. Pretty safe. Vegas. Gross. I don't know. Vegas. Okay, Pittsburgh at Vegas. 2.5. Oh, these teams are bad. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. The Vegas defense is so bad, dude. And I think we're going to, this is the Kenny Pickett. Oh, he's not as bad as he's been the first 2 weeks of the season when he had to play the Niners and the Browns game.
Yes. There's still, right, the Canada questions in Pittsburgh. Of course, you know, Mike Tomlin coming out and saying like, hey, you know, we want fans to be spoiled and salty, I think is what he said about, you know, the fans' evaluation of the offense. They just make some questionable decisions sometimes. And is that the defense they're playing, or is that just a part of what Kenny Pickett's going to have to get used to? I'm sneaky worried, though, when that hit that Pickett took, where he kind of reached for his clavicle area, and he had some weird throws after that on Monday night. If there weren't the injuries, if both Devontae and Jacoby Myers weren't dealing with shots that they took because Jimmy sent them on missions in back-to-back weeks, I would feel a little bit better about the Raiders. But yeah, I'm with you.
That's a good point here about the Raiders receiver injuries. Finally, we've got another Monday night doubleheader, which I forgot. Eagles at Tampa. I haven't talked about the Bucs, the 2-0 Bucs. Bucs fans, I've heard you complaining. I will obviously talk about it after this game. I'm going to take the Eagles, although... No, I'm going to take the Eagles. I mean, what do you make so far of the 2-0 Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I think, right, we've seen a team coalesce around Todd Poles. Like, Todd Bowles, the Bowles Assance is here. Glad to have them back and being relevant. They've made plays the Shaq Barrett play, right?
That's cool.
As much as it was like, oh, Justin, what are you doing? Like, the play is still there to be made. Yeah. And the Baker's answered questions early on. Mike's going to hit 1,000 yards. You know, it's all great. We're like waiting for it to fall apart.
It will. He will.
But 2 weeks, they've played well these 2 weeks. They're 2-0.
Well, I think
you can't fight them on that.
The TLDR kind of summary is what we said before the season, which is they have good players. This is always the thing about Tampa. Like, there's good players, like, on both sides of the ball. Like, I think Baker's played better than I would have expected. But when I was like saying it will, I guess I was specifically talking about, like, there's, you know, he's going to have a game where pressure or what, you know, he makes some bad decisions. And I think that the things he's doing well are things he's done always over the course of his career, if that makes sense. Like, he has a good arm. There's certain concepts that he's excelling in, that he's always excelled in. You know, the problem with Mayfield has always just been consistency. So I just don't, you know, can he keep it up for 3 games? I don't know. We'll find out. I'm taking the Eagles. Final game, the night game, is the Rams at Cincinnati. Little bit of intrigue because of the Joe Burrow injury. I think this is, if Burrow's hurt, I'm taking the Rams. I'll say that. If he plays, I'll probably take Cincinnati, but I don't feel that good about it. Matthew Stafford has been a significantly better quarterback so far this year.
And there was, I think it's cause for celebration for fans of training camp, where coming out of training camp, it's like, hey, you know, Puka and Tutu, like, this is, and people, the reaction is, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we've seen Tutu at well, but they've got like 56 targets to like 9 for Van Jefferson, who's an afterthought in this. And it's been so successful because of how good Stafford has been. We saw Noteboom leave the game, able to still, you know, get something, but there was a shift when Joe Noteboom left that game against the 49ers a little bit. Not sure if he came back in or not, but it's better than expected.
You know, Sean's
getting things figured out. My question with regards to Joe Burrow, right, is if the calf is still an issue, and has been an issue, and you're having to alter the way you play, you kind of need to protect the player in this instance. Why is he playing if it's bad? Because I just don't want to see him out there hobbling around towards the end of the game when, you know, there's like 4 or 5 balls 15 yards down past the line of scrimmage. One gets picked off on a great play by Geno Stone. Select did a great breakdown of that on The Ringer, where he's kind of freelancing, maybe made the wrong decision. But if you make the wrong decision and everybody's in the place you expect them to be, it's going to turn out. And the Bengals aren't on the receiving end of anything like that. And they've got to get – Nine's got to be healthy.
Yeah, it's I think with Burrow, it's a little bit of – a lot of the injury, a little bit of both the Browns and the Ravens defenses are very good.
Yeah.
And I think – if he had not re-aggravated at the end of the game, I would feel pretty good about this matchup, because I think it would finally be like, okay, we're playing a defense, it's not that great. But the injury is, it just really throws a wrench into things. So we'll see. Golly. This is one where I think you have to kind of just monitor every single report that comes out about how hurt he is or whatever. So I got a few upsets in there. We'll see if I change to the Rams. See if I stay in first place. I'll keep you posted, Patrick. As always,
it's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. I know the plaque is put our name on a plaque. Yeah.
It's lonely at the top.
Thank you as always for joining us. You guys can follow him at Patrick Claybon, just at Patrick Claybon, right on Twitter.
That's right.
At Patrick Claybon.
Watch him. Elon charges me for like a. It's like, hey, here's to not have an ampersand or something.
You catch him on NFL Network and many platforms. Thank you as always for joining us, Patrick.
Thanks, Mina.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.